Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Gimel and Aleph, three lines down. Here, the Gemara is continuing to discuss the problem that arose in the Mishnah, which is that the Mishnah begins, Dinei Mimonot B'Shlosha, that monetary matters require three judges, and then right afterwards it says, Gzelot V'Chavalot B'Shlosha. It says that Gzelot V'Chavalot also require three. Why would you need to specify Gzelot V'Chavalot if you already mentioned Mimonot? Seemingly, Gzelot V'Chavalot would be subsumed under the broader category of Dinei Mimonot. So the first suggestion to deal with that problem was brought by Rabbi Abou, who said that Dinei Mimonot is a kalal, is a general statement, as if we would say Dinei Mimonot B'Shlosha, colon, what is the definition of Dinei Mimonot? The answer is Gzelot V'Chavalot. And as we explained in yesterday's daf, that is Gzelot V'Chavalot as opposed to Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot. And the Din of Shlosha will only apply to Gzelot and Chavalot and not to Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot. The Gemara then tried to clarify what exactly does that mean. Rabbi Bo himself says that a minimum court requires that you have three individuals there. So even for Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot, there's still a requirement of three individuals. So therefore the Gemara came to the conclusion that Eino Hanami, that the din of Gzelot V'Chavalot and Hoda'ot V'Halva'ot is identical min HaTorah. They both require three judges, and they require three mumchim, which means that they require three judges that have smicha. But because of the din of Rabbi Chanina, we are makil by the case of Dinei Mimonot. And that is in two aspects. One aspect is the need for drisha v'chakira, the requirement to check into the edim and to have high evidentiary standard. That drisha v'chakira, which we find by dinei nefashot, and should have been extrapolated to dinei mimonot because of the pasuk mishpat achad yelechem, we waive that. Number two is we also waive the need for mumchin. Both of those are for the same reason, which is shelo tino delet bifnei lovin, which is that we don't want to shut down the credit markets. If we make it hard for the creditor to get his money back, he's just not going to lend the money. So we want to facilitate his ability to retrieve the money. So the two things that we do in order to do that are, number one, we do not require the edim go through drisha v'chakira. We basically lower the evidentiary standard. And number two is we don't require mumchim. You can have a beit din of three that don't have to have smicha. So that's the kula that we have by hoda'ot v'halva'ot. And that was being hinted to in our Mishnah. The fact that it says, Dinei Mimonot V'Shlosha, and then it says, Gzelot V'Chavalot V'Shlosha, it's telling you the definition of Dinei Mimonot V'Shlosha is Gzelot V'Chavalot, because there you have all the regular dinim, both the fact that you need Shlosha, that you need Mumchim, and that you need possibly Drisha V'Chakira. We saw in Tosafot yesterday that he discussed that matter. So now we're continuing with the Gemara. The Gemara says, V'Le'ato, if that's your solution to the problem, Ta'u, if they make a mistake, they should have immunity and not have to pay. So the way that Rashi learns it over here, it's not so simple the way that Rashi's learning it. As Rashi says over here, that if you're a mumche of Beit Din, if you have smicha, one of the benefits of smicha is that you're granted immunity. So that means that if you go ahead and you adjudicate a case and you make a mistake in that adjudication, you are exempt from reparations or restoring the money that you transferred improperly. And that's the immunity that's granted to a judge who has smicha. So the way Rashi learns it over here is elamiato. If you're granting that three regular people, or maybe three judges, can adjudicate a case of hodot v'alvot, then you're elevating them to the status of mumchim. They should be equivalent or on the same plane as a mumche, and therefore they should be granted immunity, just like you grant immunity to a mumche. That's the way Rashi learns. And then the Gemara's answer is, koshakein atan noel delet bifnei lovin. If that's the case, you're definitely going to shut down the credit markets. If the creditor thinks that he's going to get some farcical beitin, that is a beitin that, first of all, doesn't have to be a mumchim, and number two, is a beitin, if they make a mistake, doesn't have to make payment or restoration of the losses that they caused, then the creditor is going to say, I'm never going to get my money back. I'm going to have some individuals who are adjudicating the case who don't really know what they're doing, and there's no repercussions to their mistakes. So that can't be the way that we'd want to learn this. We can't be granting immunity to these judges. That's the way that Rashi learns it over here. The Balei Tosafot take issue with Rashi's explanation because it doesn't really make so much sense. The way that the Lashon of the Gemara that continues over here doesn't seem to be saying like what Rashi is saying, but rather he suggests, V'hachi perusho, tein dechaven dechaisha denila delet, if you're already opening up this possibility that we're going to ease procedures and restrictions in order to facilitate credit in the market, let us also provide this additional thing, which is that if someone makes a mistake, they will not have to compensate for it. And that way you'll find more judges. You'll find more available individuals who are willing to adjudicate a case if they're not held accountable for it. The answer to that is, yes, you might get more judges, but the types of judges that you're going to get in that case are not the judges you want. And it actually will cause a problem in liquidity in the credit markets because the creditor will say, I don't want to lend money because I don't trust the judges afterwards. So we have to find a balance between easing the restrictions that allow the creditor more easy access to the return of his money, but you can't make it so that it's that so many restrictions are released or that there are no standards anymore, because then the creditor is going to feel that he can't get his money back at all. So that's the way that the Balei Tosafot learns it. Rashi himself, further on in the Gemara, actually gives an alternate way to read the Gemara over here and suggests that since over here you are not requiring drisha and chakira of the edim, the judge should be granted immunity because he can say, had I had the possibility to do drisha and chakira on the edim, I would have come to a better conclusion, I would have come to the right conclusion. Your preventing me from doing drisha or chakira is what caused me to make the mistake in the case. And therefore, I should be granted immunity because the mistake was generated by the inability to do drisha and chakira over here. Again, the Gemara will answer to that, that it makes the situation worse, which is that if we are going to indemnify, give immunity to the judges, you're going to end up in a worse position. Even though there's no necessity for drisha v'chakira, we still have to hold them up to a certain standard of accountability. Otherwise, creditors are not going to trust these types of courts. Now the Gemara continues and says, Ihochi, given Rabbi Bo's answer, it doesn't seem to work so well in the Mishnah because Ihochi Tartek Tonin, there are really two statements that are being made in the Mishnah, which is Dinim Memonot Bishlosha Hedyotot. Monetary matters are adjudicated with three individuals who are not Mumchim. Gzelot V'Chavalot Bishlosha Mumchim. And Gzelot V'Chavalot really have three Mumchim because we said before that Gzelot V'Chavalot have the requirement of Mumchim, whereas the cases of Hodot V'Hovaot do not have the requirement of Mumchim. So in the end, you're not really saying a general statement, which is Dine Memonot, and then defining Dine Memonot as being Gzelot V'Chavalot, but rather you have two separate statements here. If one statement is a Dine Memonot Bishlosha, that is three regular individuals or three judges that don't have Smicha. And then you have Gzelot V'Chavalot that have that higher standard, which is they have three judges, but those judges have to be Mumchim or have Smicha. That's number one. Ve'od, Shlosha, Shlosha, Lomali. The way that the Mishnah is written doesn't seem to fit into what Rabbi Yabou says, because if it was like what Rabbi Yabou says, the Mishnah should have stated like this. Dine Mimonot, colon, Gzelot V'Chavalot, Bishlosha. Or, you could have written Dine Mimonot, Bishlosha, colon, Gzelot V'Chavalot. But the Mishnah mentions Shlosha twice, and that seems to indicate that these are separate categories. You have Dine Mimonot, Shlosha, and then the next category is Gzelot V'Chavalot, Bishlosha, and that's evidenced by the continuation of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah couples together issues that are of similar nature, and brings them together, and then writes Shlosha. So if Dine Mimonot and Gzelot V'Chavalot were really the same topic, or the same issue, then the word Shlosha should have only appeared once, and not twice. And so for that reason here, the Gemara is coming to a point where it doesn't think that Rabbi Bo's explanation of the Mishnah is viable. Elama Rova, but Rava offers the alternative now. Tartek Tani. Eino Chanami. Just like we just said before, there are two separate statements that are being made here. Dine Mimonot Bishlosha, the Hedjutot, and Gzelot B'Chavalot Bishlosha Mumchim. Yishom de Rabbi Chanina. Because of the din of Rabbi Chanina, that there's a difference between Hodot V'Havot, or Dine Mimonot, and Gzelot B'Chavalot. So that's the way that Rava will explain it. He basically latches on to Rabbi Abou's distinction between Gzelot V'Chavalot versus Hodot V'Havot, but he explains the Mishnah as making that distinction. Dine Mimonot refers to Hodot V'Havot, and Gzelot V'Chavalot is a different category, and that's why they are delineated separately. And that's why each one of them has Shlosha, because the Shlosha are different. By the case of Dine Mimonot, it's Shlosha Hedjutot, and by the case of Gzelot V'Chavalot, it's Shlosha Mumchim. Rav Acha Breid Rav Ika Amar, he makes another alternative suggestion over here, which is Midoraita Chad Nami Kasher, that Mita and Torah, you only need one judge in these cases. Shenemar, because the pasuk says Bitzedek Tishpot Amitecha, that you should adjudicate or you should judge your friend fairly, justly. But over here, it seems to indicate from the word Tishpot that a single individual could be the judge for the other party. And so that Minat Torah is only a requirement for one individual to be a judge in these cases. The way that Rashi explains it over here is, when it comes to hodot v'halvaot, tichtiv, because it's written by the hodot and halvaot, that v'tzedek tishpot amitecha, and that is at Lashon Yachid. The Ein Eruv Parshiot Kan. So, harking back to yesterday's Gemara, what Rashi suggests over here is that this opinion believes that when it says in the Parsha of Shomer Chinam, it mentions, because the Pasuk then continues and says, Asher Yomar Ki Huzeh Ad Olayim Yavo Dvar Shnehem. So that Ki Huzeh, we learn as Modav and Miktzat. And we saw yesterday, this is Rashi the Shittato, that that's speaking about a case of Halva'ah. That's speaking about a Halva'ah. It's embedded in the middle of the Parshiah of Shomrim. And just like by Shomrim, you would require three, because it says the word Elohim three times. And you would require three Mumchim, because it uses the term Elohim, which is a terminology that references to Mumchim, to those that have Smicha. So just like by Shomrim, you would require three Mumchim in order to adjudicate, so too by Hodot Valot, you require three to adjudicate that are Mumchim. So what Rashi is saying is, according to this opinion that you only require one min Torah, he does not think there's an Eruv Parshiot over here. And therefore, Hodot Valot are totally separate from Shomrim. The Shomrim, or Gzelot V'Chabalot, will require three Mumchim. Hodot Valot are on a totally different track. They're not mentioned here. They don't have the din of Elohim. They don't have the din of three Mumchim. They have the din of Betzedek Tishmot Amitecha. And so, therefore, he does not have the limud of the three because he doesn't subscribe to this Eruv Parshiot. And that's why he believes that midoraita, it is sufficient. Now, still, rabbinically, midrabanan, we require that you have three by hodot v'halvaot, and it's not sufficient with the one that is acceptable midoraita, and we'll see in a second why that is the case. The Balei Tosafot are bothered by Rashi's explanation here, because Rashi's explanation doesn't tell you why you need Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha. Rashi simply says that he doesn't believe in Eruv Parshiot, which is a negative statement. It's a statement that I don't believe that you need three Mumchim over here. Just because you don't need three Mumchim doesn't tell you what you do need. And that's what Tosafot says over here, that Rashi's explanation of Eruv Parshiot doesn't tell you what you do need by Hodot Valot, it just tells you what you don't need. You don't need Shlosha Mumchim. Therefore, Tosfot says it's clear that the limud of the Gemara is from Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha. That is a positive statement that requires that you have one individual that adjudicates the case of Hodot V'Halvot. And so therefore, Tosfot says he thinks it's irrespective or independent of whether you believe Eruv Parshiot or you don't believe Eruv Parshiot. That Betzedek Tishpot Amitecha tells you that the din of Hodot V'Halvot is unique. And that din of the Hodot V'Halvot only requires one, because of Tzedek Tishpot Et Amitecha, and not because of, yes, Eruv Parshiot, no Eruv Parshiot, but rather because of Tzedek Tishpot Et Amitecha. The Gemara says, so why do we require three then by Hodot V'Halvot? Amishom Yoshvei Kranot. Problem is that you might pick up some individuals who are not really well-educated, or savvy, or learned enough to adjudicate the case properly under the Torah law. So Yoshvei Kranot can refer to either those people that hang out at the cafes at the corner. These are individuals, whether they're unemployed, or whether they don't have much work to do, but they just hang around. Or others suggest, that Rashi mentions them maybe as Tagarim, that they are merchants that do business or transactions, that either they own the stores on the corner, or they frequent those stores to do transactions. As Rashi says over here, they are tagarim she'im bikim b'tiv dinim. They just don't know the laws, or they don't know how to adjudicate a Torah case. And therefore, they're going to make mistakes over here. So in order to prevent that, we don't allow you to use one individual for the risk that you might end up with the wrong individual. You might end up with the Yoshev Kranot. Are you telling me then if you get three, you're still going to end up with no Yoshvei Kranot? Just because you're making it to three instead of one doesn't mean you're not going to end up with people that are inappropriate or people that are not qualified to adjudicate. It says, there's no way that if you have a sampling of three that you won't end up with one of them at least that knows what he's doing or knows how to adjudicate the case. Now, what we have to say over here is that Tzedek Tishpot Et Amitecha is not simply a requirement for one individual, but it is a requirement that that one individual be a Talmud Chacham, someone who understands the law and knows how to adjudicate the law. And that is Tzedek Tishpot Et Amitecha, that we are relying on this individual to come to a just outcome. And that can only be true if this person is learned or well-versed in the laws. And so since the requirement is that you have someone who knows what they're talking about or knows the laws, then we want you to get the right person. The risk is that you won't get the right person because you'll pick a person who seemingly is in business, but he's not well-versed in the laws or he doesn't know the proper outcome in these situations. So we tell you to pick three, because out of three, you're at least going to get one person who learns. Now, whether that is because there can't be a situation in which you pick three people and you don't want to end up with somebody who doesn't know what they are doing, that's the way Rashi learns it, which is Shishama Michachamim, Umidayanim, Hilchotin Milve, that he happens to be around or heard the Chachamim, Paskin in cases, or Dayanim, to give their positions. And so from his experience in life, he has an understanding of what the halacha or what the right outcome should be over here. That's the way Rashi learns it. Others suggest that this is a case of picking judges, that we know that when a person goes to pick judges, he makes assumptions about the individual's knowledge or ability to adjudicate the case. So when he makes a pick of one individual, there's a possibility he could be misled or he can misjudge the individual. But once he has to pick three people, there's a good chance that within the sampling of three, he's at least going to get one person where he gets the assessment right, and he's picked someone who knows what they're doing and can adjudicate the case. So for that reason, we require that you have three individuals in order to have it baked in that has at least one individual who knows what they are doing. So now, elamiato, if that's the case, ta'u lo yishamu, that if they make a mistake, they shouldn't have to pay. Rashi over here says, da bishudnachte, because they are adjudicating with permission of the Torah, afilu midoraita. Even from the Torah condones or allows you to have one judge in the case. And so therefore, especially when you have three there, these individuals should be granted immunity from having to pay because they are appropriate judges. This is similar to what Rashi said before, that if you are judging with permission, you should be granted immunity. Then again, the way that the Balei Tosafot are explaining it over here, again, if we're looking for ease of setting up a Beit Din, then that ease of setting up the Beit Din, which the Torah only requires one individual, and the Chachamim instituted three, but still, we should then ease other restrictions that surround it. Where it says, again, you go down that route, you're going to end up with a lower quality of individual. The Yoshvei Kranot are maybe reluctant to take on the job if they know that they're going to have to pay if they make a mistake. If they're granted immunity when they go, then all of them are going to volunteer. Why not? What would stop them, or what's the impetus for them not to take on this case if they're not going to have any liability associated with making a mistake? And so that's what the Gemara says, that if you give them immunity, you're going to end up with a situation when you end up with more Yoshvei Kranot rather than less Yoshvei Kranot. And here we're trying to prevent, or we're trying to stop our Beit Din from having improper or unqualified people on it. And if you give them immunity, you're just going to increase the possibilities or the chances that you get someone who's not qualified. Right, so now the Gemara says, Ma'ika ben Rova the Ravacha Breda Ravika. What is the difference between the position of Rava and the position of Racha Breda Ravika? Ike ben Ayu, the nafkamina between them is the din of Shmuel. Damer Shmuel, Shnaim Shidanu Dinam Din. So we mentioned this in passing yesterday because of the Balei Tosafot. Rabbi Bo says that a Beit Din is a minimum of three. If you don't have three, the din is disqualified. It's an improper din. Over here we have Shmuel taking a different position, which is Shnaim Shidanam Din. Two people who adjudicate a case, even though that's not appropriate, even though they shouldn't be doing that, nevertheless, their conclusion is binding. Elash nikru Beit Din Chatzuf. They're just mechutzafim that they put together a Beit Din of two instead of a Beit Din of three. The Rava lately the Shmuel. Rava certainly does not hold of Shmuel because Rava believes that you need a Beit Din of three. Rava says that you need a Beit Din of three hedjotot, or three people without smicha, for hodot valvot, and need a Beit Din of three smuchin for gzilot v'chavalot. But Rava at minimum has that same requirement like Rabbi Yabohu, that you have a Beit Din of three. Without a Beit Din of three, you don't have a Beit Din at all. On the other hand, the Ravacha Breda Ravika, itle de Shmuel, he certainly will subscribe to Shmuel, because over here, he says that by gzilot v'chavalot, there's a requirement of three smuchin, but by hodot v'halvaot, there's only a requirement of one midoraita. So certainly if one works midoraita, then he will subscribe to Shmuel, who says that two work midoraita. And that'll be the nafkamina between them. But that does set up an interesting dilemma as to how we should paskin in this case. Because Rova is considered a Batra. He is at the transition point within the Amoraim, but we say that the later Amoraim, we pass a halacha like them. So normally, we would give precedence to the individual who's older or comes first. So it's a Tana would trump an Amora. But even within a single period, at a certain point, we give the benefit of the doubt in terms of passing halacha to the later individuals in that period. The reason being is that they have the benefit of seeing the opinions of all those that come before them. And so therefore they carry more weight in terms of the achrad of halacha. So Rova is considered to be within that category of being a batra of the later period of the Amoraim. And so that generally we would say the halacha is like Rova. So over here you have a case where Rova clearly disagrees with Shmuel. And so therefore that would say to us that we should favor the position of Rova who says that Shmuel is incorrect. The only problem is weighing on the other side is that later on we find that Rav Nachman thinks that the halacha is like Shmuel. Truth is that Rav Nachman's a Talmud of Shmuel and Rova's a Talmud of Rav Nachman. So over here we have a stira on the Klalei HaPsak, which is that Rova's a Batra would usually win the day. But when it comes to Dinim, Rav Nachman, because he was a Dayan, he has extra weight in terms of Dinim and things that relate to Dayanim. So the question is, do we paskin like Shmuel or do we not paskin like Shmuel? You have Rav Nachman supporting him. You have Rava, who, from the way the Gemara sets it up over here, disagrees with him. So if you look in the Balei HaTosafot, he already brings this. He says, Bahag, the Balei HaLachot Galot, Posek Shmuel. He passes like Shmuel, Afagav, the Rova, Poligalei. Even though Rova argues on him, he passes nevertheless like Shmuel. Yishum de Rav Nachman, Koikavate, Lekaman. Because Rav Nachman is supportive of that position of Shmuel later on. And for that reason, the Balei HaLachot Galot believes that the halacha should be like Shmuel, despite the fact that Rova over here disagrees with him. And the truth is that the Rif paskins not like Shmuel. The Bahag over here clearly paskins like Shmuel. And therefore we end up with a machloket, the Gabi Apsak, as to whether the halacha is like Shmuel or not like Shmuel with regards to this din of Shnei Dayanim Shidanu, whether Dinehem is considered to be a din. And the halacha, the Shulchan Aruch, when he brings it down, the halacha, quoting the Rif and the Rambam, says that we will not paskin like Shmuel, or we will not accept the Shmuel's din. Elaim Kain, the litigants accepted the Beit Din. In essence, if the litigants make the Beit Din into a board of arbitration, or they accept it as an arbitration, then we will say it's fine. But if that's not the case, then the Beit Din of two would be considered to be invalid, unless one of the judges is an expert judge, because of what we saw over here, that by Dinei Memonot or Dov Vavot, there's a possibility that a Mumcha Yachid might be sufficient. So absent a Mumcha Yachid, or the acceptance by the litigants of the Beit Din as a board of arbitration, then we would assume, the Shulchan Aruch says, like the Rif and the Rambam, that the Halacha is not like Shmuel in this case. Right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Nezek v'chatzi nezek v'chule. So the Mishnah continues with other items that require shlosha. And the next item is nezek. And the Gemara says, nezek hainu chavalot. Isn't nezek, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, synonymous with chavalot? So now, it's not as simple or clear as what the Gemara lays out over here, because as Rashi notes on the Mishnah, chavalot in general are damage that is done to an individual, to a person. And generally, nezek is damage that is done to property or the possessions of an individual. So now, why is it that the Gemara here assumes that Nezek and Chavalot are identical? So Rashi in the Mishnah says, Chavalot is ha-chovel b'chaveiro, person who damages his friend, is chayav in the chamisha dvarim. Nezek is a shora mu'ad, o adam sheheziko. It's a case where you have a shor mu'ad, or an adam that does damage. The way Rashi learns it as nezek means damage that's done to an individual by the possessions of another individual or by another individual. And that's why it ends up being synonymous with chavalot. But as the Balei Tosafot, the last Tosafot here, acknowledge that it's not as clear that there is this direct overlap between them. Because he says, lo b'shor sheizik shor kamar. Nezek can refer to a case where the monetary possessions of one individual damage the possessions of another individual. The shore of A injured the shore of B. That's also nezek, and that's not covered by chavalot. So you could separate between the two items and say nezek is referring to damage to the possessions of an individual, And chavalot is damage to the person, another individual himself, the goof of that individual. And that way you could separate between the two. The Gemara here seems to think that nezek and chavalot are synonymous. But the truth is, you really could separate between them and say that even though nezek might subsume within it some aspects of chavalot, it has a bigger span than just chavalot. Chavalot is injury to an individual, whereas nezek involves not only injury to an individual, it also involves damage to the property of an individual, to the possessions of an individual. In that way, you could seemingly separate between the two items. Nevertheless, the Tosfot says, "Zmiu nira de'ari b'chol inyan," that even here, when you're talking about nezek and chavalot, we're talking about all types of nezek. Af b'shor dazik shor. Even a shor that damage is shor. Nezek is broader than chavalot over here. But again, we could have said here that chavalot is either subsumed under nezek or the other way around. Nezek is subsumed under chavalot because one of the five items that one pays for when they damage an individual is nezek. So even though there is nuance or separation between them, you could have written either nezek or possibly chavalot, and that would have been sufficient. And therefore, the Gemara wants to know, why is it that you need both of these items mentioned over here? So the Gemara says, you're right, nezek was unnecessary. Since it had to write chatzi nezek, then tani nami nezek shalem. It also added a nezek shalem, which is gratuitous, but it did it because it's going to say chatzi nezek, so it mentioned nezek as well. Chatzi nezek nami hainu chavalot. How is chatzi nezek different than chavalot as well? Again, it could be an injury to an individual. A short tam could damage an individual. And in that case, it's also again subsumed under the category of chavalot. Where it says, tana mimona uktane iknasa. So it's a difference between mamon and knas. When it comes to nezek, we're speaking about monetary compensation. When we're speaking about knas, we are speaking about penalties that go to the individual. So short tam, which pays chatzi nezek, that is a penalty or a knas. So I wanted to point out one thing in Rashi. Rashi over here says, chavalot mamonahu, that chavalot are considered to be monetary compensation. Because you diminished or you ruined the value of the individual. This goes back to what we discussed in Baba Kama, an introduction to Baba Kama, as well as many times in Baba Kama, that when a person has to make restitution or compensation for nezek that they do, there are two possible ways to view that payment. One is to view that you damaged the individual, you reduced the value, you diminished the value because of the damage that you did, and therefore you now you have to make compensation for that damage that you did. That's one possible way to look at it. The other possible way to look at it is that it's a payment to restore the individual or the item to its former state. And so therefore the compensation is really restoration, not recompense for the damage that was done. Over here, and maybe I'm making too much of it, but Rashi adds an additional two words here that are not found in the Gemara, which is chavalot mamonahu, that chavalot, damage done to an individual or damage that is done in terms of chavalot, is the afchate l'demei, is that you reduced or diminished the value of the object. And that seemingly would favor the view that damages or nezek, the compensation that is paid, is to compensate for the losses incurred or the damage that you have done, and would not be like the other side, which is that it is the restoration of the individual, the item, to its former state. So just noting that those extra two words in Rashi, maybe you could make a deal out of that, that Rashi is favoring that view within nezek, that the payment or the compensation that one makes, a restitution that one makes for damage, is for the reduction in value or the diminishment in value that you caused to that individual or to his possessions. Gemara says, wait a minute, is that really true? We know from the Gemara and Baba Kama, that's a machloket. That works well according to the one who says that the chatzi nezek that you pay by a short time is a knas. The one who says that it's monetary compensation, ma'ika the meimar. Then why did you separate or why did you add in chatzi nezek if it's already subsumed under chavalot? So just to refresh ourselves with regards to chatzi nezek, there are two views within the Gemara in Baba Kama as to why a short time only pays chatzi nezek. One view is that technically the Baalim are completely exempt in that case. They shouldn't have to pay anything because it was unexpected. A shor in general does not do damage. A shor in general is a domesticated, controlled animal, and the Baalim should not have anticipated that the shor would act in this way. So therefore, they should be completely patur. Nevertheless, the Torah imposes sanctions on them and fines them the chatzi nezek because we want them to now be aware of the fact that their shore is behaving in an odd manner, and we want you to take stronger precautions to make sure that it doesn't damage other people or it doesn't damage other people's property. So we are kones. We put on a kanas, a fine on you, despite the fact that you should be completely patur. We kones you chatzi nezek. That's one view of the Gemara Baba Kama. The other view of the Gemara Baba Kama is that truthfully, a short time, you should be chayav for 100% of the damage. Elishachasa Torah. The Torah had mercy on the individual and said, look, a shor is a staple product, a staple part of the life of those individuals. Again, as I mentioned when we did this in Baba Kama, it's the equivalent to have a car today. Anybody who needs to transport things, move around, or to work the fields, require a car or require some sort of mechanized, motorized item today. In their day, you required a shor. So everybody needs to have a shor. And it would be impossible to live if we didn't give people some latitude and some room to maneuver by having their shor when it damages the first time, in a sense, be exempt. Now, truthfully, they're chayav 100%. The Torah was chasa and says, look, we'll give you a buy in these cases because it was unanticipated, it was unexpected. In that case, it's palganizka mamona, which is truthfully, you're chayav 100%, but we give you a waiver to only pay 50%. So that's the origins of the differences of opinion over here. What the Gemara says is, if you believe that chatzi nezek is a knas, then you can explain why chatzi nezek mentioned the Mishnah, because that's differentiated from nezek or chavalot, which are mamon. Now then, if you believe that chatzi nezek is also mamon, then how is that differentiated from mamon or chavalot that we mentioned beforehand? So therefore, if the man damar paganis gemona, Michael Meimar, Ella, I did the kabay the mitnei tashlume kefel, tashlume arba v'chamisha. So in the case later on, the next lines in the Mishnah are that cases of kefel, the double payment for a ganav who is caught, or tuain tanat ganav, shlumi arba v'chamisha for a ganav who steals and then is toveach or mocher, he either shechs or sells the animals, again, depends, ashor v'seh, depends which animals that he does it to, then in that case, that is the mamon, shenu mishtalein beroshu, that is mamon that is not connected to the principal amount, or the underlying value of the animal. These are knasot that exceed the value of the nezek that one has to pay. So, chatzi nezek is paying less. Chatzi nezek, if you believe it's mamon, is actually getting an exemption and paying 50% instead of the 100% that he really owes. In the cases of kefel and arba v'chamisha, they are unique or differentiated from what we're talking about before, nezek before, which is that they pay in excess of the damage that's done. They're paying damages of double, quadruple, quintuple, the current amount. So for that reason, they have to be delineated separately in the Mishnah to tell us that they require only a Beit Din of Shlusha. And there, Tananami Chatzi Nezek de Mamon. Once we were already dealing with Knasot that exceed the principal amount, the Mishnah also mentioned Chatzi Nezek, which is Mamon Shein Mishtalein Beroshu, is also something that is not equal to principal payment. It's less than the principal payment. V'adid the Kaboy the Mitnei Chatzi Nezek, Taninami Nezek. And since it was throwing in Chatzi Nezek, it also threw in Nezek. So in order to deal with Tashlumei Kefel Arba V'Chamisha, the Mishnah went through Nezek, Chatzi Nezek, and then Kefel Arba V'Chamisha because of the flow of thought or continuum of association that Arba V'Chamisha and Kefel pay in excess of the Karen. Chatzi Nezek pays less than the Karen, and the Nezek is the Karen itself. And that's why all of these items are included in the Mishnah. Right now the Gemara continues and says, Shlosha Minalan. Now, the whole first part of the Mishnah says that in all these cases, you require three judges. What is the source for these three judges? The Tanur Banan, because the Psukim say, by the Parshiota Shomrim, in Parshat Mishpatim, it says, V'nikrav balabait el Elohim, harikan echat, ad Elohim yavo devar shnehem, harikan shnaim, asher yashion Elohim, harikan shlosha, divrei Rabbi Yishaya. So Rabbi Yishaya says that the word Elohim appears three times in the Parshiota Shomrim, and therefore, each one of these Elohims teaches us, number one, you need a judge. Number two is you need a judge that is a mumche. And that is the source for the fact that you need shlosha mumchim by these matters. Rabbi Yonatan Omer, Rishon tchila ne'emar, ve'en dorshim tchichilot. That the first time the word Elohim is mentioned, it's considered to be a tchila. And when it comes to a tchila, we do not enumerate it. Ela, ad Elohim yavod dvar shnehem. That is the first Elohim that is mentioned, Harikan Echad. Asher Yarshion Elohim, Harikan Shnaim, that's number two. Vein Beitin Shakul, So now you have two judges, but you can't have an even court, because then you can't come to a decision. Therefore we add on one more, harikan shlosha. And that's how you get to the three. So here you have a machloke between Rabbi Shaya and Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Yonatan believes that the psukim only give you two judges, and then the third judge is added because you can't have a beit din shakul. Now then, Rabbi Shaya believes that the word Elohim appears three times in the psukim, and those three times teach you that you need three judges. The Gemara says, Neima b'dorshim tchilot kamiflege. Let us say that their machloket over here is whether you are allowed to darshan the first time a word appears in a sequence that we're going to darshan. The Gemara says, b'dorshim tchilot. Rabbi Shaya thinks that the first time the word Elohim appears, you can darshan that as they have significance. And therefore he counts three words of Elohim. Umar Sabra ain't darshim tchilot. Now then Rabbi Yonatan says the first appearance of the word Elohim is not a for drusha. It's the core word that is being used in this situation. And therefore we would not have a drusha with regards to that time or usage the first time it appears. Only the subsequent two times that it appears do we darshan from the word Elohim the requirement for judges. Now, here there's a machlok between Rashi and the Balei Tosafot as to what it means that ein dorshim tchilot, that we would not be doresh tchilot. The Perish of Kuntres, or Rashi, explains over here, is because we need it to teach us mumchim. The first time the word Elohim appears is to teach you that the judge needs to be a mumche. So that's why we need the core word Elohim. And then only the subsequent words of Elohim that are used can be for a drasha, and that's how Rabbi Yonatan comes up, but there's only two judges that are mentioned here, and the reason we get to a third one is a logical argument that you can't have an even beit din. And then the end, Rabbi Shaya believes that you can be doresh tchilot, and therefore you can be doresh even the first word, Elohim. The Balei Tosafot disagree with that, because our Gemara is in a second going to say that Kuli Alma agrees that ain't doreshim tchilot. And that's not because we need the word for an alternate drasha, because Rabbi Shaya says you could have used the word shofet over here, and he would have said ain't doreshim tchilot, even though according to the way the Balei Tosafot has written in Rashi, the word shofet itself would not have meant a mumche. Although the truth is that we don't have that girsa in Rashi, and Rashi might have believed, this is what the Yad Ramah says, that the word shofet does mean mumche, and therefore that is the drasha of Rav Shaya, which is that the word shofet and Elohim both mean mumchim, and therefore the change from shofet to Elohim is significant, but we still need the word here to teach us the din of mumchim, and that's why it's not counted towards the three. But, at least according to the way that Tosfot has the Girsa in Rashi, the necessity of the first word for another drasha is not what causes us to say ein dorshim tchilot. And so therefore Tosfot says that it's a different concept here of ein dorshim tchilot, which is just a basic principle when you have a list or enumeration of words that are repeated over and over again inside of a set of psukim. When you have these words that are repeated, how do we view it? Do we view it that you can count all the words that are there, and each one of them will stand for a drasha? Or do we say that the first time the word appears, that's not unusual, because you have to use some word. Now, only when there's a repetition of the word, or it appears over and over again, then there's a significance to that. Therefore, you'd only darshan from the second time it appears onward, because that's the significance that you have now, a repetition of words. Therefore, Tosafot says the difference of ein dorshim tchilot or dorshim tchilot is simply a fundamental way to view drashot. When you have multiple words in a drasha, do you start from the second word or do you start from the first word? And Tosafot does highlight that in tomorrow's daf, we have a number of drashot where the Gemara just takes the words and starts from the first one and starts counting right away the drashot and never leaves over the first word in order to be ein dorshim tchilot. So Tosfot says you have to look into it, try to understand why the Gemara doesn't even entertain the possibility that the first time the word appears, that maybe that is not for a drasha, but the Gemara just assumes that if you have these multiple words, from the first word or the outset, there is a drasha. So now the Gemara says, no, that we won't accept that as being their machloket. The kuliyama ain't dorshim tchilot. Everybody agrees you're not doresh the first word. Amar lecha Rav Shaya, im kein emakra, v'nikra balabait elo shofet. If that was the case, then you could have just said, Nikra Balav Abayit Elo Shofet, my El Elohim. So then usage of the word Elohim now becomes significant because you had an alternative that you could have used Shofet. Shmamina the Minyona. Therefore, it's included in the count of the three times the word Elohim appears in these parshiot. Yonatan Lishna the Almanakot. That the Torah uses the language or the colloquial language of people. Kedamre Insheng. Because the way that people speak or what people normally say is, Mandeid Leidina. The person who has a case that needs to be brought to court, the karev, the gabi dayono, he should go to the dayanim. Now, the way that Rashi explains it over here is that etzel dayana ragil, below etzel hedjot. When a person wants to go to get a case adjudicated, he just doesn't go to any willy-nilly individual to get the case adjudicated. Normally, when he goes, he will go to a dayan. So if you have a din, if you have a case, or you have an argument, an altercation between parties, their most likely destination will be the dayan, the judge. And so therefore, in the first case, when you have the word that appears over here, you can't say that the word appearing has significance, because that's the way people would speak. That's the way that people would communicate. And therefore, it's lashon b'nei adam, and there's no significance to the fact that the Torah uses the word Elohim instead of using the word shofet. Because normally people, when they say they would go to get a judge, they go to an expert judge, which is represented by the word Elohim. And there's no significance in the fact that the word Elohim is mentioned here, because that's the way people would speak to one another. And so we won't draw a distinction between Shofet and Elohim, because the word Elohim is what people would use if they were going to bring their case before a court. So now the Gemara says, V'Rabushaya leitle beit din note? Does Rabushaya not believe that you can't have an even-numbered beit din? Because he does not use two limudim and then say that the third judge comes to the fact that you can't have an even beit din. That's the view of Rabbi Yonatan. But Shaya requires a limud for each one of the judges. Why doesn't he just require a limud for two judges and the third one would be an automatic addition to the court so that you have an uneven court or you have an odd number of judges on the court? So is that really true that Rabbi Yoshai doesn't subscribe to this idea that you can't have an even number of judges on a court? Vatanya, Rabbi Eliezer, Benosh, Rabbi Yossi, Aglili, Omer, Matamud Lomar. What is meant by the Pasuk, Lintot, Acharei, Rabbim, Latot? What does it mean that you go after the majority? A Torah Mera, Aselecha, Beitin, Noteh. You should create for yourself a Beitin that tilts or can tip, that meaning that it can come to a conclusion, that it can have a Hachra'ah, which means that you must always have an odd number of judges. Doesn't he subscribe to this basic limud? Sabra like Rabbi Yehuda. No, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, who says, Damar Shivim, that there were 70 judges, Shivim Zikenim, in the Sanhedrin Agdola. Because that's what it says in Parshat Balotcha, that Hashem tells Moshe to gather together the 70 individuals who are going to help you out. So that 70 is the Beit Din Agadol. In our Mishnah, we saw the alternate opinion, which is that 70, but you can't have an even Beit Din, and therefore it's 71, or it's 70, and Moshe Rabbeinu sits atop that, and therefore you have 71. It's not Sanhedrin Gdola Itashu Shivim Echad. That's the Tanakama's view. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Shivim. It only has to be 70. And even though, as the Baalei Tosafot point out, there are times in Shas that we see that the Sanhedrin Gdola was mentioned with 71, or that the number 71 is significant with regards to the Sanhedrin Gdola. And what does Rabbi Yehuda do with that? So he explains over here that Enoch Hanami, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that the Beit Din was comprised of 70 individuals. And then Moshe sat on top of that. And then Moshe was the supreme justice in that case, but he wasn't a voting justice in that case. There were 70 dayanim that were part of the Sanhedrin Gdolah, and Moshe was the overseer of that Beit Din. So in total, there are 71 individuals associated with the Sanhedrin Gdolah, but there are really only 70, quote-unquote, voting members of the Sanhedrin Gdolah. And as the Baalei Tosafot say, that Mechain b'chol sanhedrin gdola haya shem mufla shebeit din shelo haya min hacheshbon, that every Beit Din had a mufla who was like a super duper judge that presided over the Beit Din Agadol after the Sanhedrin Agdola, even though he was not amongst the numeration of the 70 that were there, and he wasn't necessarily a voting member of the Sanhedrin. It says Imor the Shmait le the Rabbi Yehuda b'Sanhedrin gdola. Now, maybe Rabbi Yehuda says that the idea that you can have an even Beit Din is only true by a Sanhedrin Agdolah, because Dichtivei Karai, because the Pasuk specifically specifies Espeli Shivim Zekenim. But Hashem says to Moshe, take 70 Zekenim. 70 means 70 and not 71. But Bashar Beidina Mishmayetle, when it comes to any other Beit Din, why would Rabbi Yehuda believe that there should be an even number and not an odd number? It's only because the Torah explicitly says 70 do we say that that's the case by the Sanhedrin Agdolah, but that wouldn't necessarily be true by any other Beit Din. He would agree that if you have an even-numbered Beit Din, it's a problem. Therefore, you would need 3 and 23. The loshna, and if you want to say the review that makes no distinction between Beitin Agadol and other Bati Dinim, in our Mishnah Ratznan, Smichat Zgenim Varifat Egla B'Shlosha. We saw in our Mishnah that when it comes to the Smichat Zgenim of the Parhelam Dabar Shel Tzibor, where these Zgenim come to represent the Sanhedrin and do the Smicha on the Parhelam Dabar Shel Tzibor, you send 3 of amongst the Sanhedrin Agdolah to do this. Varifat Egla B'Shlosha. And same thing with the measuring from the corpse to the nearest city for Egla Rufa, that's done with 3. Divrei Rabbi Shimon, that's the position of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda Omer B'Chamisha, that these require 5. V'amrinan, my time at the Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position? It's because the pasuk says, V'samchu, by Paralem Dover Shel Tzibur, it says V'samchu, that they do smicha, shnayim, that's in plural, that's 2. Ziknei, Shnaim. Ziknei is also in plural, and Ziknaim usually are associated in the Torah or synonymous with the judges or the Talmidei Chachamim. So Ziknei means 2. Vein Beitin Shakol. And then you can't have an even Beitin. Mosivin HaModachad, you add 1 more, Arikan Hei. And that's why you have 5 by these situations. But you see, how does Rabbi Yehuda get to 5? He has sources for 4 judges, and then he says it's a Beitin Shakol, and therefore you have to put another party there to make it an odd number. Well, if that's the case, you see the Rabbi Yehuda only thinks that by a Sanhedrin Agdolah, you're going to have 70. But any other Batei Din, you have to have an odd number. So Gemara says, Rabbi Shaya defa min Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Shaya subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda, and he ups him 1. Which is, Dehi Rabbi Yehuda b'Sanhedrin Agdolahu deleitlei ha'bishar b'inyanayitlei. By Rabbi Yehuda, only in the Sanhedrin Agdolah can you have an even number of 70 individuals. By any other Beit Din, he requires it be an odd number. Rabbi Shaya b'shar b'anidinei nami leitlei. Rabbi Shaya says, not only can the Sanhedrin Agdolah have an even number, so too can any other Beit Din. So then the Gemara says, v'la hai lintot ma'ovid leit. So then what is he going to do in the pasuk that says lintot, which seems to indicate that a Beit Din has to lean in a certain direction or come to a conclusion through majority? According to you, you could have situations in which the Beit Din has even sides over here. So mukin la b'dinei fashot. No, he says that applies to dinei nefashot, which means that only by dinei memonot will he say that an even Beit Din is possible, but by dinei nefashot there will be a requirement for an odd-numbered Beit Din. So Gemara says, aval b'dinei memonot, lo? By monetary matters, we wouldn't go after the rov. Elahad etznan. Then what are you going to do with this Mishnah? Shnayim omrim zakai. 2 individuals say that he is innocent or that he is not liable. V'chad omer chayav, and one of the judges says that he is obligated or liable. Zakai. He goes out acquitted from this situation because you have majority rules. Shnayim omrim chayav, v'chad omer zakai. You have 2 judges saying that he is liable or obligated. V'chad omer zakai, and the other one saying that he's innocent or doesn't have to pay. Chayav. In that case, he's chayav because the majority rules. So, Neima Delok Rabbi Shaya. Let us say that that Mishnah cannot be authored or cannot be reconciled with Rabbi Shaya's opinion. But it says, no, afilu teima Rabbi Shaya. Rabbi Shaya can even fit into that Mishnah. Maiti labi kavachomer mi dinei nefashot. He learns that as a kavachomer from dinei nefashot. Uma dinei nefashot techamri rei. Dinei nefashot, which are much more stringent, severe, serious issue. Amar Rahman and Zil Bata Ruva. Over there, the Torah says that you have to go after the Rov. Dinei memonot lo kol shekein. Then when it comes to monetary matters, certainly over there you should be able to go achar harov. You should be able to go after the majority. The way that Rashi explains the difference between what we would have thought in Rabbi Shaya's opinion and what we say in conclusion is that according to Rabbi Shaya, who says that you can have an even number baked in, we would have to assume that you need a unanimous decision, which is that the pasuk says that you require 3 judges, and Rabbi Shai is saying that each of those 3 judges is necessary to come to a conclusion. That means that you would have to have a unanimous decision or conclusion in order to obligate the individual. And so therefore, what we thought Rabbi Shai would say is that you need 3 to agree to the outcome of the case. Majority would not rule. But yet we see a Mishnah that says that majority rules with regards to these matters. So how are you going to explain Rabbi Shaya's position and reconcile with that? If you, according to Rabbi Shaya, require 3, and it has nothing to do with Hachra'ah, but rather to the fact that the Pasuk tells you you need 3 judges, then you should have to come to a unanimous conclusion. So how could you fit into a Mishnah that says that you can have majority rule? My answer is, Rabbi Shaya learns that by Dinei Nefashot, from the Pasuk of Lintot, that we see that by Dinei Nefashot, the Beit Din is Machria, based on a majority. So if it works for Dinei Nefashot, it certainly should work for Dinei Mimonot, and you should be able to adjudicate based on majority and not unanimity. Now, there are a number of interesting things about this. Number one is that we know by Dinei Nefashot that you have a requirement when you exonerate the individual to have a just simple majority of one. Now then, if you want to make the person liable or punish the individual, you need a majority of two to do that. Now, if we invoke the principle of Dayo, which is that when you learn something from another item, it can't be better than the other item. So if by Dinei Nefashot you require two to make the person liable, culpable for the punishment, then by Dinei Mimonot you should have to say the same thing. To acquit him, you would only need a majority of one. In order to make him liable, you would need a majority of two. What many of the Rishonim point out is that the comparison is not fair. And the Baalei Tosafot say this in a different context. They say it in the situation of Lo Tie Acharei Rabim L'Ra'ot, that you can't go after a majority for that which is bad. The Mashma Dehu Davar Shehura Lakol. Dehainu Dinei Nefashot. So there, the Psukim over there are speaking about Dinei Nefashot because it makes a distinction between Ra and Tov. By Dinei Nefashot, there's clearly black and white. There's a good outcome and there's a bad outcome. That's clear when you have capital crimes or capital punishments. Acquittal is good, and then obviously guilty or a finding of guilty is bad. By Dinei Mimonot, as we mentioned in the last Mishnah in Baba Batra, over there, by Dinei Mimonot, one party it's good for, and one party it's bad for. You don't have an objective good when it comes to Dinei Mimonot. And therefore you can't call something Tova or Ra'ah in those situations. It is Tov for one and Ra for the other. And that's why Tosafot says over here why you would explain that the psukim of Acharei Rabim Lintot or Lo Tie Acharei Rabim L'Ra'ot to speak about Dinei Nefashot and not Dinei Mimonot, like the opinion of Rabbi Ushaya, but also it helped us to explain why when you make the Kavah Chomer from Dinei Nefashot to Dinei Mimonot, you wouldn't have the same application of saying, oh, you need a majority of two in this case and majority of one in that case, because by Dinei Mimonot, there's no such distinction between Ra and Tova. And therefore, a simple majority would be sufficient in either direction, because it's good for one and it's bad for the other. And so therefore, you never have a case which is Ra or Tova that would be subject to that distinction of a majority of one or a majority of two. The other thing that is mentioned over here by the Baalei Tosafot, and turns out to be very important, not because of what's said here, but because of the Gemara in the beginning of the third parak in Baba Kama, as well as in other places where there's a machloket as to whether it be by Mamon Hochim Achar Rov. Do we go after the Rov when it comes to monetary matters? Over there, Shmuel is of the opinion that we are not Hochim Achar Rov, that we don't go after majority, or we don't decide situations or cases by majority. So if you have a circumstance and we're trying to assess the situation, we don't look at what would be the majority of people would do in this situation. That is not a way to make a decision about a monetary case. So Baalei Tosafot over here asks on Shmuel's position, if over here by the case of the court, we say that you can learn out Dinei Mimonot from a Kal Vachomer for Dinei Nefashot, that if you go after the robe by Dinei Nefashot, then we also go after the robe by Dinei Mimonot, why don't we say the same thing by Shmuel's din? If it's good enough for Dinei Nefashot to go after the Rov, why don't you say also by Dinei Mimonot, or the cases that Shmuel's speaking about, that you should be Hochim Achar Rov, and that should be a Kal Vachomer from Dinei Nefashot? So the Baalei Tosafot say, first say, a distinction drawn by other Rishonim, that Tosafot disagrees with, and says that don't tell me the difference is Ruba to Ita the Kaman, Ruba to Leta the Kaman. There's a difference between a majority that sits in front of us, versus a majority that is assumed from a sampling of a larger set, which is over here when you have the judges sitting in front of you, that's a ruba to ita lekaman. That's a robe that's sitting right in front of us. We can see the numbers of judges that are voting in favor or against, and therefore you have a robe that you're looking at, versus the case that Shmuel is speaking about, the instance over there happens to be if you sell an animal, what do most people buy a shor for? That most people buy a shor in order to plow with it. So now, if the guy sells without saying anything, and it turns out that this animal is not good for plowing, do we say, Achim Achara Rov, we go after the majority, and majority of people buy this shor to plow. And the fact that this shor is not capable of plowing, cannot be used for plowing, is that a Mekach Taot? So Shmuel says, no, we don't go after the Rov over there. That Rov is not a Rov that's sitting in front of us, it's an empirical Rov, which we know that majority of people from the surveys that we took and the samples that we looked at, majority of people would buy a shor for plowing. But that's not something that's physically in front of us right now. it is something of a statistical knowledge that we have, and now we're trying to apply it to our case. So Tosfot says, don't make that distinction. Other Mishnayim do make the distinction between our case over here and the case over there. Tosfot shows that even by cases of Ruba Deleta LeKaman, when the robe is not in front of us, we still apply robe by Dine Nefashot. If that's the case, and we're saying it's a Kav HaChomer to Mamon, then by Mamon it also should be applicable both in cases that the robe is in front of us and the cases that the robe is not in front of us. In the end, Tosfot makes a vague statement, which is, it's Erech Lamar, the Ruba LeRadja Zivene LoChashiv Piana Ruba, that the robe by the case of Shmuel is not similar to the robe in our case over here. And therefore we don't rely on that robe by Dinei Mimonot. The Bali Tosfot never really explained what the difference is, but it could be, like we said before, the one that Tosfot rejects. Obviously this is not the view of Tosfot, the other, what we mentioned before is the Ruba de Itta Kamad, Ruba de Letta Kamad. Might also be a difference in that in the case of Shmuel, you have a robe that's going up against a Chazoka. And in that case, the robe is not strong enough to overcome a Chazoka. Whereas by the case of the Hachrat Beit Din, but if we're trying to determine the validity of a claim, then robe is a sufficient vehicle for Hachra'ah in that situation, because it's not necessarily going up against the Chazaka, it's trying to determine what the conclusion of the court case was. It also might be a difference in the way that the court system works, and this is brought by Reb Chaim in his discussion about this issue of Hochim Achar HaRov B'Mamon, and the discussion of the Bali Tosafot and Baba Kama as well, which is, the difference is that when it comes to a court, the individuals, when they're voting on the court, it might be 2 versus 1, it might be 13 versus 10. So the decision of the court will be swayed by a rove. But once the rove governs in the case of a court case, we don't then say that afterwards we give up psak halacha, like is true today in the modern courts, where you have the individuals who voted in one direction write up their conclusion, and the ones who dissented also write up their conclusion, and you have a presentation of the two sides and the majority rules. In the Batei Dinim, that's not the case. In the case, once the decision is made, that becomes a unanimous decision of the court. And therefore, we view the minority that votes against it either kedaleta, as if it doesn't exist at all. So even though generally we say rubo kekulo, that the robe is as if it's the totality, over here, that's really true. Once you have a rove that votes in one direction in terms of the achra of the case, that rove then dictates what the Beit Din as a whole will say. And that now is, this Beit Din paskins this and this. And we're going to see later on in the Masechta that there's a restriction on the judges in the case from disclosing their position and as to whether they dissented or favored the outcome of the case. And that means that we basically want the court to present a unified front or unanimous decision in the conclusion that it comes to. And even though that conclusion internally within the court itself came through a rove, once that decision is made, it becomes the full decision of the court. Either because then we say that's the way the court is viewed as a single unit, and therefore once you have the rove going in a certain direction, that whole unit is saying something. Or is it because when you say you have a rove in the court, we view the dissenting opinions kelet as if they don't exist, and therefore there's no more rove over here, it is the kol of the Beit Din that is speaking in this case. And in that way you can differentiate here between a rove that is found in the cases of adjudication versus the Hochim Achar rove by Mamon that is mentioned by Shmuel. Because in a normal case like Shmuel, you have a rove and a miut. And what we say is, in Hochim Achar rove by Mamon, which is that we don't assume or we don't make assumptions that just because statistically it would be likely or most likely that this would be the situation, we don't then automatically say that that is the situation. We don't assume that that rove governs so strongly that it's as if it is kikulo. On the other hand, by the court cases or the cases of a court that is voting in terms of a majority, we don't view it simply as being a majority with a minority that's out there, but we view the majority as becoming representative of the whole of the Beit Din itself. And differentiated from that case of Shmuel, we still see there's a rove and a miut. And what Shmuel is saying is that when you have a rove and a miut, the individual can say, I was part of the miut. I'm part of those minority of individuals, and therefore what I did was totally fine. And the rove can't govern in that case. But now the Gemara continues and says, Tanu Banan, Dinei Mimonot B'Shlosha, that like our mission says, that Dinei Mimonot are 3. Rabbi Omer B'Chamisha. Rabbi says you require 5. Today she Gemara et Din B'Shlosha. This is something we mentioned in the Mishnah yesterday. That's in order that the completion of the Din will be with 3. Mercedes, Atu Butlata, when you have three judges in a case, Milo Gamardina betray, don't you conclude the case with two? So if you say in a case where you have five, then you finish off the case with three, it means that the majority will determine the outcome of the case. You have five, so three will be the majority. So the same thing should be true in a case where you have three judges, then two would be the majority. So what's wrong with that? So Achikamar, Mipnei Shgmardin Bishlosha. The Rabbi wants the conclusion of the case to be with three. He wants the majority of three over here, which will become the opinion of the court. He wants that majority to be a full Beit Din or numbered three. Alma Kasavar, Tzlata, Kiktive, Bigmardina Ktive. What he's saying is that when the Torah requires three, it doesn't require three judges. It requires that three individuals paskin in that way. So you have to have five judges so that three will come to that conclusion. Megadefa Rabbi Abo, a very strong term. Megadef could mean to curse. Rabbi Abo cursed the individuals who came up with this explanation. Or Megadefa might have a looser side that he waved and Sanhedrin dismissed these individuals. Elamiato, that's the case. Then the Sanhedrin Gdola should require 141 members. So that when you have a majority that governs in the case, it'll be 71 out of the total judges here, like the requirement of 71 that is associated with Sanhedrin Gdola. And the Sanhedrin Tana would require 45 individuals. In order that you could have a conclusion by majority that is 23. Although the Balei Tosafot point out that by the Sanhedrin Ktana, the number 23 is not the real number. Mina Torah, the number is 20, and then we have to add on other individuals because of the Hataya, because of it's a even numbered Beit Din, but the core number is 20, and therefore if you had to get a conclusion that had 20, and if you require 20 to be the Gemar Din, then you would only need a Beit Din of 39, so it would be 20 versus 19 that would govern, but then you'd have 20 to represent the position of the Beit Din. So that basically, if we extrapolate this idea that the number of members of the Beit Din is not the number of the members of the Beit Din, but rather the number of members in the Beit Din that come to the conclusion in the case. Or in essence, they would be the majority that is present in the Beit Din. So if you want to suggest that that's the case by five, then you would have to extrapolate that to 23 and to 71. And then you'd end up with these courts having to have a much larger number of shoftim in order to get the Gemar Din to have these numbers of 20, 71, and 3. Ella, that can't be the explanation of Rabbi Yehuda's position, but rather it says, Esfali Shivim Ish Amar Rachmana. It says that you should gather for me 70 individuals. This is in Parshat Balotka. Mishat Asifa Shivim. From the moment that you gather them together, at that point, you need them to enumerate 70. So it's not a din, or the numbers here are not a din in the number of judges that are paskening in a single direction. Rather, it is the amount or number of judges that you need on day one when you open up the case or open up the trial. So that's true by the Beit Din of 71. Vishafatua Ida, Vitzilua Ida, which is in the case of capital punishment where there's a requirement of 23 from the Ida. Nami Mishatche Shvita Taida. Also over there, you need those numbers in place from the moment that we are judging the Eida that is present. Hachanami, and so too in our case, Nikra Balabait Elohim Mishat Kreva Shlosha. From the moment that they present the case, or they come to adjudicate the case, at that moment already, you need to have the right number of individuals in place. So that can't be the explanation of Rabbi's position over here, because it's clear here that the numbers that are required in the Psukim are from the onset or the beginning of the case, not the parties that are taking a certain position in the case. This is the reason behind Rabbi's position that you have Chamisha. It says, Asher Yarshun Elohim. Trey, that's two, because the word Yarshun is in plural, and therefore that gives you two. Nemar Elohim Namatav and Elohim Namalo. In the Pasuk, it mentions the word Elohim twice. So just like in the case over here by Asher Yarshun Elohim, we're saying that that means two. So too, by the other usage of the word Elohim in those parshiot, we'll say that's also equal to two. Malamata shnaim, after malashnaim. So just like by Yarshin Elohim, the definition then of Elohim is two because of the plurality, so too in the psukim above, ad Elohim yavod varshnehem, over there we will define the word Elohim to reference to two. And then what are you going to do with the time it says Elohim, which is the yukra balabait Elohim? Rashi over here says, because he believes that you don't darshan the first appearance of the word that you consider to be extraneous or unnecessary here. You don't count the first appearance of the word, similar to what we said above. And therefore now you have Elohim equaling 2. Elohim equaling 2 is a total of 4. Ve'ein beitin shakol, and you can't have a beitin as an even number. Mosifilim ein or dechad, therefore you add on an additional individual. Harikan chamisha, and that's how you get to the 5 by dinim emonot, according to Rabbi. On the other hand, Rabbanan say Yarshiun k'tiv. Yarshiun is written chaser, and since it's written chaser, it doesn't have that meaning of plurality to indicate that it means 2. And so therefore, Rabbi, who thinks that the word Elohim is defined as 2, so it appears twice in the parsha, so 2 plus 2 is 4, and then you have a problem of beitin shakol, and so you end up with 5. On the other hand, the Tanakhama says the word Elohim, or the Rabbanan say the word Elohim, and your shiun, even though it is plural, but over there it's spelt in a way that doesn't make it look like it is your shiun. And therefore we wouldn't read it as a plural, but rather as a singular form of the word. So therefore each Elohim gives you one judge, and you can't have a beit in shakol, and therefore you end up with 3 judges for dinei mimonot. Okay, we're going to stop here on the first line of Dalet Amud Aleph, and the Gemara is going to continue tomorrow with a concept called Eim Lemisorot, Eim Lemikra, which is that when you have words in the Torah that have a kri and a ktiv, do we darshan the word based on the way that it is pronounced? Or do we darshan the word based on the way that it is written?